The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Faster Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Yesterday, the UK government presented its autumn budget. The Chancellor of the Exchequer told everybody what would happen regarding taxes and tariffs, support for business, improving public finances. Now, the Treasury is the department which has to navigate its way around any implications there'll be for the Isle of Man, because obviously they're there to secure the funds to build our future. So the Treasury Minister is here for the next hour. And Faster Mai, good afternoon. Hello, Alex Allinson. Hello, Treasury Minister.
Faster Mai.
You were watching yesterday as Rachel Reeves navigated her way around there. Did you notice any tremors of the eye where she was concerned?
It is fascinating. If I can just sort of make your listeners clear, we don't get a press release beforehand. We don't get any prior notification of what they're going to announce. And neither do their MPs, and I think neither do some of the ministers. Yes. Normally, because they publish the speech actually after it's been made. We're different on the Isle of Man. We actually share the pink book with all political members about 6 weeks before the budget, and actually we're going through now, we've got a Timor committee looking at how we could do it better, but watching it was extraordinary, because first of all it had been leaked, so if you went onto the BBC, yes, you could find out exactly what she was going to say even before she stood to her feet, and she was looking at her phone and you could see her face then, because the OBR pressed the wrong button apparently, which is very embarrassing for them. And then when she did speak, she spoke for about an hour and a half. A lot of it was very political rather than purely financial. And the order in the House, I mean, people were shouting at each other, and the Deputy Speaker had to pull them up at least half a dozen times. And actually made the point right at the start of the budget that when you're announcing the budget, it should be to Parliament who vote on it. It should not be done through the back door, through the press, with all the briefings and all the speculation, which isn't good in terms of certainty. So yesterday we were around the table, we being the entire Treasury team, everyone from tax, national insurance, customs and excise, taking notes and then comparing those with each other and seeing not what was just in the speech, but what was perhaps in the small print afterwards. And that's what we've been doing overnight as well.
Okay. Any direct implications? We heard in the news, obviously, the sugar tax and what have you.
Yeah.
But any direct implications for the Isle of Man?
So on the positive side, there was no significant increase in VAT or anything like that, which with the reciprocal agreement we'd have to follow suit with. So VAT was kept exactly as it is. Similarly, there were no cuts to VAT either, which I was slightly surprised about. Some of the messaging beforehand was a bit obscure. No change to their direct tax rates, no change to their direct national insurance rates. The bits that affect us, as you've already said, were tobacco duty. One of the things I had to do last night was sign an order. And so the average pack of 20 cigarettes went up by 96p. They've twigged it with their inflation there. So that went up straight away. The other aspects, alcohol's going to be going up by 3.66% from the 1st of February next year. Often, the price of a pint would go up on the same time, but they've left that until February next year.
Why would that be till February?
I think it's to give the hospitality industry some buy-in time. And actually, it used to be right across the board. I get the feeling that those rate increases in February perhaps would spare pubs, spare the price on a pint, and perhaps concentrate more on a bottle of whiskey or wine. And also they've got what's called a small producer relief discount with small distilleries, small breweries, and the amount they pay. And so we're waiting for a bit of an update in terms of the alcohol duty. The fuel duty, which was cut back in 2022 when fuel prices soared, if you remember, a litre of petrol went up over £2 until they cut the fuel duty by 5p. It stayed like that. They're going to extend that cut until September next year. From what I gather, September next year it's going to go up by a penny, and then another 2p in December, and then another 2p in March 2027. So they're going to ease that back in. That will affect us. An interesting one they suggested was from October next year to bring in a duty on vaping liquid, which is obviously new. As more people vape, they're going to bring a duty on that. We're looking at to see whether that should be a shared revenue. Soft drinks levy, as you said, we share that, so it brings in a previously about £1 million a year, which has been used for some of the public health initiatives around dental health, in specific. They bring that in January 2028. Now, what will happen between now and then is some of the people who make milkshakes or you know, frappuccinos or whatever will decrease their amount of sugar, so that they don't have to pay the duty.
Where would a vape levy be? I mean, who'd enforce that? Because would that be customs and excise?
It would be customs and excise, but it's complicated because it's taxing something you've never done before. Yeah. So what they've said is that they're going to have a vaping duty stamp scheme to support compliance. I'm not quite sure what that means.
Yeah. Especially, a lot of people get vapes through the internet now.
Exactly. Or one of the issues in the UK that they're finding, and again, part of the budget was about compliance, is illegal sales, tax-free sales from shops. So it would be interesting to see how they bring that in. You talked about online. One of the aspects that we will have to work with them about is, at the moment, there's a de minimis threshold for charging import duties, about £135, in terms of packages coming into the UK. And there have been increasing concerns from people buying things off eBay, a couple of the big clothes retailers from China coming across. Now, America have brought it in so that you have to pay duty on that. There's going to be a consultation going ahead in the UK to see whether they should be charged duties. And Rachel Reeves made a point about trying to support the high street against online retailers, because it's all very well that you can order things online. They don't pay any duty on anything like that. They don't pay VAT if it's under £135. So you could buy lots of small parcels and actually spend a lot of money without any of that duty coming, and that undercuts the people on the high street who pay rents and rates. And
again, how would that be levied here? Presumably the post office.
We would have to work with the post office about how that works. Again, that's out for consultation. That's in the future. But one of the other things that came up, which again we need to do a little bit of work on, was the motability scheme. Now, people here who are on disability living allowance at certain levels are able to get special grants to buy a car, a vehicle to help them, a modified car. There were various comments that I found difficult, really, that we shouldn't be funding people to have BMWs and Mercedes. Well, most of the people I know who work through motability don't have those sort of cars. Yeah. They get a fairly normal car. They're making changes to that in terms of what cars you can get, in terms of the high value cars, and bringing in a VAT for top up payments. But they've then said tax changes do not apply to vehicles designed for or substantially or permanently adapted for wheelchairs. So again, it's looking at some of the small print on that. Overall, it was an interesting budget. The lots of shouting and noise. Some of the other aspects in terms of the remote gaming duty has gone up from 21% to 40%. We don't think that will necessarily affect the gaming industry here, because a lot of that is outward looking rather than directly acting within the UK. But there are some things within the budget which, as it rolls out, will perhaps affect us. It's just constantly working with Treasury over there.
Okay. All right. Well, I've got lots of questions coming in. Thanks. Text, email and WhatsApp, 166177. Email is studio@manxradio.com, 166177 for WhatsApp and message. But first, let's get to the lines. And here's Julian with us now. Julian, hello. You're live with Dr. Allinson.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Alex.
Good afternoon.
Hiya. Just wondering, why are around 670 people on the island being paid benefits that exceed a full-time wage cost to the taxpayer of over £17 million a year, which I think is more than Manx Care's overspend bailout cost in July. Why aren't we avoiding policies that seem to be incentivising benefits over working?
So what you're referring to is a written question that was put in, and we analysed those people who were receiving benefits above what you would normally earn if you were being paid the minimum wage. Now, those benefits actually often are compounded, and particularly when we're looking at those who are being paid more than £25,000 a year, often that's people with disabilities who need extra resources to pay for the adaptations, the extra cost of living that they have to pay to exist on our island. This is not a substitute for work, but it's dealing with specific issues. And when you look at some of the people involved, they may have disabilities or they may have children with disabilities. So when you add up the overall benefits, that may be over the £25,000, but that's a relatively small number of people, considering that we pay out about 40,000 benefits each year, predominantly pensions, but also looking for particularly for people who have increased cost of living to do with disability. So the headlines that were picked up by certain media outlets here have created a bit of concern amongst the community. We have people who have disabilities who feel that perhaps they're being vilified. The reality is, if you have a disability, the amount you have to spend to have the same or even getting close to the standard of living able-bodied people have is significantly higher. And that's where things like disability living allowance come in. That's where aspects in terms of income support come in to help those people be hopefully a fuller participant in our society.
Julian?
Well, of the 676 people, I mean, how many were disabled?
So when we've looked in more granular detail, a lot of them were had disabilities or were members of a household with other members who had disabilities, particularly children who may be on the lower rate of DLA, or having children who get child benefit or get income support for other extra costs. So again, what we're doing through the benefit system sometimes is trying to substitute for the increased costs of living on the island if you have disability. I absolutely agree with the premise that we have to make working pay. We should be trying to get as much as possible people off of benefits into work, into employment, not just because of benefit payments, but because we know that people's mental health is better when they're in a decent working environment with other people, rather than feeling as though they're perhaps left the side on the scrap heap.
How do you distinguish between a household where benefits are being legitimately claimed for verifiable disabilities and one that isn't?
Yeah, when we've looked at the overall risk of fraud or people claiming benefits they're not entitled to on the Isle of Man, it is incredibly low. But those people unfortunately exist. Sometimes their circumstances change and they don't tell us, and so they're overpaid benefits that they're no longer eligible for. The media are very keen on the Isle of Man to publicise these cases, because we do have an enforcement team who will go out. We also have a confidential line for people if they've seen something that they think people are claiming benefits they're not entitled to. They can report that, and we will investigate all of those. And if we find that somebody has been fraudulently claiming, we will prosecute them, and we will try to get that money back for the taxpayer. But at the same time, we have to respond to people's needs, and there are people in our society who, for no fault of their own, need that extra support above and beyond what you'd normally earn through the minimum wage.
Of course, one thing that exacerbates this is that people are living a lot longer than they used to. We routinely have people living into their late 80s, yeah, and into their 90s. So anything age-related predominantly is going to occur, isn't it?
Well, it's great that people are living longer, and I certainly don't disparage that, but you're right, and some of the really higher payments for things like nursing home accommodation run into over £1,000 a week. That we have that ability to fund that for those people who can't fund it themselves. But at the same time, the Department of Health and Social Care have done a large bit of work looking at the long-term funding of residential nursing and home-based social care to get a more equitable system there, so that it's a fairer system. And that's what we're constantly trying to do with the benefit system at the moment. But again, we've seen in both in the UK and here that when you try reforming benefits and you try rationalising it, even if it's in the interest of fairness, there can be a backlash that people do feel threatened. So we need to do that in a very organised and orderly way, explaining why we're doing things and the long-term benefits for them.
Julian?
Yeah, just one other little question, just a short one. On the other side of the balance sheet with monies coming in, has there been any money returned to the island by the Labour government through the VAT agreement as yet?
So the VAT sharing agreement was recalculated back in March. We are getting that money on a regular basis. There needed to be some repayment to the UK, particularly if you remember during COVID, they cut VAT on hospitality, and that amounted to around about £20 million for that period, and that had to be paid back. But we are getting the money for VAT through the sharing agreement now, and actually VAT, although it's an indirect tax, contributes quite significantly to the overall government revenue.
Okay, all right, Julian, appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
All right, thanks very much. Cheers.
22 minutes past 12. I suppose, I mean, just talking about the welfare payments that we have to make, it's surely the price of a civilized society. You know, everybody wants to have a civilized society. People are living a lot longer. Yeah. We can't let people live uncivilized lives, surely. I mean, if the state is there to step in, the state should step in.
I absolutely agree. I mean, the welfare state that was set up post-war has been remarkably successful in terms of benefiting everyone in our society. And we're talking about the provision of healthcare free the point of need, but also a benefit system that fills in the gaps and stops people falling through the cracks in society. If they're unemployed, if they're ill, if they have a disability, that they're provided for. I think it's getting that balance right, and I think a lot of people who are working long hours, particularly low pay, and see other people getting large amounts of benefits, think, well, hang on a minute, why is that? We in Treasury and the Social Security team try to get a fair system for benefits. It will never be fair for absolutely everyone, but try to get as fair a system as we can. When you look at the total benefit bill from the Isle of Man, it's significant, but it's predominantly state pensions because people have paid the national insurance. That then goes towards their state pensions. We have National Insurance Fund here, which is currently over £1 billion. To pay for the pensions not only of today but tomorrow as well. But we know that unless we have some reform to that will eventually run out because the amount people are getting out of it is far more than they actually paid into it initially. And so that's why this time last year we were talking about the triple lock, why we were talking about pension reforms, and why we will need to continue to talk about that, as well as other reforms, particularly in terms of incapacity benefit and trying to actively get people back to work for their own benefit, but also for the wider community.
Okay, and a note in from Andrew, who just said, regarding things like care homes and publicly funded care homes, she said, really, isn't the crunch coming where that's concerned? Because more and more older people every year are going into care homes, yep. And if they're being paid out of the public purse, that can't come out of nowhere.
And that's very true. I mean, the amount we spend in terms of care homes, whilst it's a relatively small number of people, I think it's about 196 off the top of my head, people are in care homes where the amount is being paid by government. It's a relatively small amount. It's a large amount of money. What Manx Care have really been pushing is rather than people having to go into a nursing home or a care home as much as possible, their care will be within their home. But at the moment, we have a disparity that you don't get a lot of funding for social care in your home, but you do get it if you go into a care home. And so that perverse incentive we need to break, and that's why a lot of work's been done. Again, the reality, though, is although people are living older, a lot of them are far healthier than they used to be in the past, but we know that particularly the last 5 years of your life, things tend to accumulate and illnesses tend to accumulate. Yeah. Most people want to stay at home, and actually the role of the healthcare system and social care system should be trying to achieve that where possible.
Robert's with us now. Hello, Robert. You're live with the Treasury Minister.
Hello, Mr. Allinson. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Robert.
Good. I'd like to talk about public sector housing, if I could come back on this. I'm just scratching my head slightly, and there doesn't seem to be many announcements. Can I ask, as Treasury Minister, or as Chief of Treasury, do many of the corporations and commissioners come back to Treasury and ask for money in terms of building and things like that? Do you get many of those applications? So if you could just comment on that, please.
Yes, certainly, Robert. So the answer is yes. Let's say Ramsay or Onchan want to build some social housing. What they do is they come to the Department of Infrastructure, who look after local governments, and say, right, we've got this housing scheme. It's going to cost, let's say, £10 million. We want to build new houses, or perhaps renovate existing houses, and what they will then do is go through a system of getting a business case agreed, and then they will bring that forward to DOI and then coming through Treasury. We have a local authority borrowing facility through one of the major banks, and so they can borrow that money at a preferential interest rate to build what they need to build, and then they repay that according to the rents that they get from those local authorities. Housing. Now, if there's a gap between the two, sometimes there can be at the start of a scheme, we've paid out all the money, but you're not getting in the rent straight away. We have what's called a housing deficiency fund that will fill that gap, so that the local authorities aren't losing money, but they are providing the housing. What we did in the last budget in February was bring that out of DOI, was open that up and put extra money into that, so we could try to incentivize local authorities to build or provide more housing. And we have seen various local authorities coming forward, whether it be Castletown. Certainly I've been working with Douglas City Corporation as well. There is some plans in terms of Peel. There's some plans in terms of Ramsay as well, because we know we need more and better quality and more adaptable public sector housing for those people. But also DOI are looking at the eligibility criteria to make sure that it's more accessible for those people, not just on very low incomes or benefits, but those people who may be working but not being able to pay some of the private rents, the rates that are currently out there.
Okay, all right, Robert.
Yeah, I think that's okay. I was just going to ask about Patrick and if Patrick had had any application at all.
I can't think of one, to be honest with you. They may have submitted something to the DOI, but certainly from a Treasury perspective, I can't think of one that's come through recently. But we have, you know, during this administration, done an objective housing needs assessment. We know that we need more housing right across the island. We also know that there has to be affordable and accessible, and so public sector housing is one part of that, but also, you know, moderately priced private rental accommodation is really important as well for those people who don't perhaps qualify for public sector housing but can actually get on the housing ladder through things like the first time buyer scheme.
Okay, all right, Robert, we appreciate that. There's a question from Jackie, and she's just saying, does the Treasury Minister anticipate a flight of rich people from the UK to the Isle of Man?
I think thank you very much for your question, Jackie. I'm not sure about a flight. I think that there are two aspects to all of this. One is there has been a big degree of uncertainty in the UK in terms of what the budget that was announced yesterday was going to do. And I think a lot of people have reassessed where they want to live and how they want to live. I think the Isle of Man is attractive to people in terms of our stability, the natural beauty here, the safety here. And so I think certainly recently we've been seeing people coming over to the Isle of Man. When you look at the latest population figures and population report, which are published by government, it's quite interesting because our population is increasing, but not massively. We tend to lose people when they're in their 18, 19, 20s. A lot of them go off to university across or get jobs across. But actually, we are attracting people coming back here or new people coming here, particularly in their 30s and 40s. So it doesn't tend to be the rich retirees who are coming here to avoid inheritance tax. It's working people coming here, possibly for standard of living, but possibly for the safety and security we have on the island. And certainly with some of the talk about wealth tax that were happening before the budget and some of the extra taxes that are being put on expensive properties in the UK and that general uncertainty, I think we will have more people from the adjacent isle thinking of perhaps they should come over here and see what we've got to offer.
Pam who just said, could you ask the Minister, are we going to tax the very wealthy and their properties on the Isle of Man instead of working people who work 40 hours a week and try and keep their head above water? This has been mentioned many times about those with the broadest shoulders taking more of the burden here.
Thanks very much, Pam. I mean, there are two aspects to that. We've tried to have a more progressive taxation system. So back in 2023, we brought in measures so that when you're earning above £100,000, we start reducing your personal allowance. So effectively, you're paying more taxes as you're earning over that threshold. So we have tried to increase that fairness, that tax fairness, so that those with higher salaries would pay a little bit more towards that. But when you look the overall distribution of earnings on the Isle of Man, it is predominantly people on low and middle incomes. We do have some very wealthy people here, but there's not that many of them. So whilst you can increase the taxes on them, that doesn't actually contribute as much as we need for public services and everything else the government provides. Pam also mentioned housing taxes, and obviously what they've done in the UK is brought in a special levy, which is above and beyond their council tax. So if you've got a house that's worth over £2 million, you pay an extra £2,500 every year. If it's over £5 million, you pay an extra £7,500 a year. But they haven't actually said where that money's going to go, whether it's the local authorities or government. Here, we've talked about rates reform previously. We've talked about the need to look at the value of people's properties, and I hope that we will get there in terms of those people who are able to own really quite expensive properties, perhaps paying more towards the maintenance of their local communities. But we have already brought in changes to land registration when people buy houses to make sure that those on very expensive properties pay proportionately more and those on relatively modest properties pay proportionately less. That's our equivalent of the stamp duty, but at much lower rates.
Okay. Dr. Allinson's with us today on Man in Line. Alex Allinson, MHK, one of the Ramsey MHK, the Treasury Minister, is on. You want to get in touch, by the way, lots of questions to get to. Text, email, call and WhatsApp.
Construction waste today.
Tells recycle for another day.
A builder skip or two.
Tells skips will bring to you.
Need quality type 1 stone for your building or contracting job? Then contact Tells with no minimum order for collection or delivery. Call 677-137. Visit Tells Limited in Snugborough or find Tells Limited on Facebook.
Skips are what they do.
We're the guys that hire one to you.
Call Tells Skips today.
677-137.
From planned parties to surprise guests, and of course the big day itself, M&S Douglas Food Hall has everything you need. Explore gorgeous gifts, fabulous flowers, beautiful biscuit tins bursting with festive flavour, luxurious chocolates, and so much more. Visit the new and improved M&S Douglas Food Hall and browse the festive range in store today. Subject to availability while stocks last.
Darker days and damper conditions require more action. Make sure you carry out your vehicle safety checks this winter. Think powders. P, petrol and diesel. O, oil. W, water. D, damage. E, electrics. R, rubber. S, self.
Make sure your lights are all working too. Brought to you by Quayside Tyres in conjunction with Isle of Man Road Safety.
Parker and Snell Company proudly presents Alfred Hitchcock's classic spy thriller, The 39 Steps, hilariously recreated for the stage. Join our handsome hero, Richard Hannay, as he's swept into a whirlwind of murder, spies, double-crossing agents, and, of course, devastatingly beautiful women. Hitchcock's thriller as you've never seen it before. The 27th to the 29th of November at the Gaiety Theatre. Tickets available at villagaiety.com, from the Welcome Centre, or call 600-555. Kindly supported by IFGL and Manx Radio.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Dr. Allinson is here, and so is Ken with us now. Hi, Ken.
Afternoon, gentlemen. The Treasury Minister may not be able to answer this question, but will the Isle of Man be following the UK and the triple lock increase for old age pensions?
Okay, so Ken, thank you very much for that. As you know, Tim Wald had a big debate about this just before the budget this year, because I made the point that really we needed to reform our pension system. It was very much Tim Wald's point of view that we needed to make absolutely certain we had a decent conversation about that. And so in this year's budget, I said that we would be putting pensions up according to the triple lock. And what I've also said is in the budget next year in February, we would be following the UK and the triple lock as well. But long term, when you look at the National Insurance Fund and its long-term sustainability, we do need to make some changes. I would really like to have that conversation with people about moving from the triple lock to another way of uprating the pensions that were paid to people past 2019, and using some of the money we save through that to reduce national insurance for those working people, to get a more fairer system right across the benefits. But certainly there was the commitment to next year's budget to continue following with the triple lock, but also to continue that dialogue with people about overall benefit reforms to make it fairer and more affordable for everyone who lives on the island.
Yeah, thank you. Can I just ask then another question? The MyCard situation.
Yes.
Have the Treasury considered the number of people that, although they might have a bank account, like to go to the post office and get cash?
Yep.
Now, we don't have any banks in Peel.
Yep.
Yep. And it's all right saying if you may not have a debit card either.
Yep. So, yes, we have. I mean, the issue with MyCard is it was set up in 2009. The world has changed since then in terms of banking, in terms of people's finance. People are using less cash. And so the number of people using the MyCard system has reduced dramatically, but the costs haven't. So, we're spending a lot of money on a system with less and less people using it. At the moment, we're down to about 580 people are using MyCard at the moment. And so it's looking at how we can progress those onto a different system. Now, people who have bank accounts, we're encouraging them to use that. We were actively writing letters, but also even yesterday phoned 196 people who are currently using the MyCard to say the cards they've got at the moment are going to run out at the end of the year. They're hardwired to run out. What we'd like to do is work with those people to either pay money into their bank account, or if they are unable to open a bank account, help them get one. We had over 30 people coming into Markwell House yesterday to work with the banks, but also for those people who can't open a bank account or can't use a bank account, provide them with a new MyCard from the 1st of January, which was part of the Tim Wald debate last week. So we do need to make sure that people have access to cash in whatever way, locally as well, to spend in the local community. And we're working with all the people who currently have MyCard to explain the situation to them and allow that transition. And I know there were lots of things were said in Timworld last week. We are actively trying to make sure that everyone gets their benefits on time. We brought forward the payment times before Christmas and before New Year to do that. But we also need to make sure that those people who've got MyCard at the moment, that they take their benefits off of them before they run out at the end of the year.
Okay. Psychologically, what do you say to the people then who psychologically just like cash? They've got something against the technology and they just love the feel of notes.
And the people do that for a whole range of reasons. I've met people who in some ways can only budget if they've got the physical money in their hand. They know how much they've got to spend. They, when the money runs out, they stop spending. They don't go into debt. And some people who have been into debt are that strict with themselves. Other people might be suspicious of banks and suspicious of if they go overdrawn, they suddenly send a letter and they're charged for it. And so, they want to have the cash in their hand.
Well, they did all go bust, didn't they, in 2008?
They did. And they were bailed out by the UK government and degree with the Icelandic bank was KSF was bailed out by the Isle of Man government at the time to help those people who put money into it. There will always be a role of cash, but increasingly people are switching to card payments. Increasingly, some places won't take cash. So if you need to book airlines now, you can go to a travel agent; they'll do it for you. But if anything online has to be debit or credit cards. So again, what we've been trying to do from a treasury perspective is work with the banks for those people who can't get bank accounts, find out why, and sometimes it's because they don't have photo ID. If you don't have a passport or a driver's license, it can be difficult. So other ways we can prove people's identity to the banks so that they don't feel excluded from what is increasingly a more technical financial system.
Okay. What's your thought, Ken?
People like cash, and we don't have any banks in Peel, so it's all right saying you have a debit card.
So where can you get cash from? There are cash machines, aren't there?
Well, yeah, but you've got to have a debit card, and some people don't like using cash machines.
Yeah, the other thing, Ken, is I've been to Peel, and the cash machine is one end of the town. What I'd like to do genuinely is work with some of the local commissioners and local authorities to see if for those areas where we need more cash machines, could we put them in the town halls? And I know that certainly Barclays worked with Castletown commissioners to put a cash machine in their town hall for them, so it was more convenient to people who were in the marketplace who could go there and use it. But I would agree with you that some people like having cash, and whenever we have these transitions, whenever we have change, we need to be absolutely certain that we don't leave anyone behind.
Okay, all right, Ken, we appreciate it.
Can I ask one more question?
Okay, quickly, if you would, yeah.
What, talking about the government wasting money, whatever happened to the consultation on care homes, how much you should contribute?
Well, thanks very much, Care. I mentioned this with another caller. The Minister for Health and Social Care will be coming to Timworld with the full report, because, as you say, there was a big consultation. They ran focus groups. They did stuff online. They sent stuff out. There are some proposals coming forward. The devil is in the detail and the cost. Because when you're talking, 20, 30 million pounds a year to help people with social care costs, either in their own homes or in a care home or residential home, so that they don't necessarily have to sell their own home, who pays for that? And how do we, again, have a fairer system right across the board, but also have a fairer system which means that people can get the care in their own homes without having to give those up? So that will be coming to Timworld.
Okay, all right, Ken, we appreciate that.
Thanks, Peter.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for that. And a note in from Andy, who just said, could you ask Dr. Allenson, why can't there be an import delivery duty on online purchases to homes, say a minimum of £10 per item, thus driving business to local suppliers? Could we have an import delivery duty on online purchases?
Yeah, so really interesting question. I know people who run shops on the Isle of Man do feel undercut by some of the big online retailers. We don't have a customs barrier with the UK. We keep VAT the same. We keep our duties the same for that good reason. I personally would always try to buy local as much as I can. But I think what we've seen in the budget is, in the UK budget, is changing some of those rules in terms of online purchases to bring in that duty. We'd work with the UK for that and certainly bring it in. What I wouldn't like to do is get to the situation where perhaps people here couldn't buy things on Amazon because they were excluded. And we've seen that with some online retailers, that if you put an Isle of Man postcode into it, they won't deliver here. We need to make sure that people on the Isle of Man get full access to services as they would across. So it's getting that balance right between buying local and supporting the local economy, whilst not also depriving people who live here some of the things that people do increasingly take for granted.
Sue sent a message in just to say, as a pensioner, why am I on the higher rate tax band, and why do I have a tax bill of £520? I already pay monthly tax on my work pension, and pension is my only income. I'm in the low income bracket, and I don't mind paying monthly tax on the work pension, but the bill is ridiculous. It's because you haven't raised the personal tax allowance, so anything you allegedly give to pensioners and the low paid is taken back in tax. Don't tell me to check it, because I already have, and I'm annoyed, says Sue.
Well, I'm sorry Sue's annoyed, and I completely agree with her. What we've been trying to do over the last 2 to 3 years is balance the books in terms of government. I made the commitment in this year's budget to increase the personal allowance, and we have done that. It's now £14,750 for a person and £29,000 for a jointly assessed couple before they have to pay any tax. I've also given the commitment that in next year's budget we will continue to increase that so that we can take more people on low pay or who are living off pensions out of taxation. And I think that's absolutely right. One of the things that they said in the UK was that they would freeze tax thresholds until April 2031 and also freeze national insurance thresholds until 2031. We have a different policy on the Isle of Man, and I'm certainly committed to try to increase those thresholds as much as we can to help people on low incomes, whether that's through pensions or work, have more money in their pocket.
Dr. Allinson's with us till one today. You want to get in touch? Text, email, call 66 1368 or WhatsApp.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Salvation Army is a church and charity who meet human need without discrimination. They alleviate poverty through practical ways and social programmes. This Christmas, they will help a variety of people by serving with hope and compassion. To help by making a donation, or to find out more about what they do, please Google Isle of Man Salvation Army.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
Spectrum Windows. If your house needs a new look and your windows let in rain, keep those cold breezes out and make it look like new again. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows. Quality through and through. Great work guaranteed.
Ellen Vannin Fuels make it so easy to keep topped up with home heating oil this winter with our smart tank monitoring system, easy payment plans, and being able to manage your account online. Call us on 844-000. Stay warm this winter with Ellen Vannin Fuels.
Celebrate the season at Robinsons. From A&J Butcher's premium cuts for festive feasts to Ross Bakery's irresistible fresh bakes, we bring you the flavours that make Christmas shine. Explore succulent seafood, seasonal local produce, and even real Christmas trees to fill your home with holiday cheer. Don't miss our in-store flower and gift displays, perfect for stunning blooms and thoughtful presents. Robinsons is your trusted destination for quality, freshness, and festive joy. Let the celebrations begin at Robinsons Food Hall, Cool Road, and Robinsons on the Terrace.
Save 20% at the Loganair Tartan sale with promo code TARTAN20. Book now at loganair.co.uk. TECs and exclusions apply, subject to availability.
Get ready for an unforgettable evening with Manx Radio Motorsport. Join us for Journey to a Dream live at the Queen's, hosted by me, Beth Espy, on Wednesday the 10th of December from 6 p.m. at the Queen's Hotel in Douglas. Experience exclusive rider Q&As with three races, live music and great refreshments, all powered by Ocals. Tickets are free but limited, so head over to motorsport.manxradio.com to reserve yours now. Don't miss this high-octane night celebrating the spirit of the road. Journey to a Dream, live at the Queen's.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
10 to 1, Faster My, good afternoon. We're with the Treasury Minister today, and Stephen is on next. Hi, Stephen, you're live with Dr. Allinson.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, listeners. And good afternoon, Minister.
Afternoon.
Can I just start by... I know you've touched on the My Card, which is excellent news to hear that you have said for those that can't, for whatever reason, will be issued with a new My Card. Is that the case?
Yes, so Stephen, again, what we've said is that the current My Cards, they're hardwired to only last for 3 years, which is why we had to replace all of them in 2022. We've been trying over the last year to get people, if they can, to move on to banking transfers because they're far more cost-effective and secure. For those people who can't get a bank account or can't use a bank account, we will be providing a new My Card in January as a payment exemption service while we work to other ways of getting people the cash in their hands in terms of the benefits that they're eligible for.
That's very good. Now, could I just touch on some other issues affected with this, which is some of these bank branches and post offices have negatively impacted the health and well-being of communities and people, and you being a doctor will, I'm sure, be concerned about that aspect of these changes. And vulnerable residents such as the elderly and those with mobility issues will also find it difficult what might just be a 10-minute journey into the post office, the local post office, can turn into a full day trying to access a bank. Also in an area, when people have cash, they do tend to spend it. So I think there's a bigger issue on this than just simply, as has been suggested in some social media posts by a certain MHK, that people are being selfish. I don't see that at all. I think what we've got to do is look at the issue holistically and try and find a solution. Now, what I'd like to go on to, which I'm sure you're aware of, is that in the UK, and I don't always like to refer to the UK, but there is access to cash regulations. Mm-hmm. And like you, you will be aware that the Department of Enterprise has conducted a report on access to cash regulations, and certainly in the UK, it would give, it, and which locally they haven't been enacted upon yet, but in the UK, people in an area can ask for a review of what is or is not in their area. Now, I'm in from Castletown up the Peel, up the coast, and round to Ramsey, there is no bank facilities. Now, I hope you would agree with me that that is a very unsatisfactory situation, and you also know that Penny, the mobile bank, has been withdrawn. So, my question is, will you support access to cash regulations tailored for the Isle of Man situation be enacted and the report acted upon to find a sensible solution? Because governments, I'm sure you would agree, shouldn't always act simply on the cost-benefit analysis. They've got to take in the other aspects, such as making people lonely and isolated can have an impact on their health, and that in turn costs money when they have to go back to their GP for all these sorts of reasons. So it's a whole lot wrapped up in this problem, more than just the issuing of a My Card to somebody.
Yeah, Stephen, I agree with you. I mean, that's why, as you said, that the DfE did a lot of work in terms of access to cash. And you're right, in the UK, they've brought in a couple of bits of legislation. Part of that is that you can get cash back from shops without having made a purchase. So, you know, if the ATMs are out and you can't get to a bank, you can actually get cash out from retailers. And that's been quite successful. They've also worked with their their own post office over there to set up what are called, being called banking hubs. Again, I have regular contact with the banks. They've seen the footfall to their branches reduce more and more. A lot of young people have never seen a checkbook and often don't carry wallets around with them. They do everything online. And so it is trying to get something that's fair for our community. But I do agree with you in terms of the social value of banking, of having access to cash, and the way that that can incentivize local spend in some of the small communities that make up our island and the bedrock of it. So what we've been trying to do is working with local retailers in terms of benefit payments, but also making sure that people have access to cash. DfE constantly monitor the ATM network and constantly monitor how we can try to work with people. But again, I've talked to the Ramsey Town Commissioners, because obviously that's my constituency, about what they can do to help people, because they often know those vulnerable people in the communities. What we've done in terms of social security is for those people who are perhaps bedbound or can't get out of the house, we can pay their benefits to somebody else, a family member, who can then get it out for them. So there are a range of things we can do to try to help. What we've been trying to do over the last year, particularly with my card, is get people to talk to us about their own needs and engage with us, and we will find a suitable solution to them, because it does differ according to where they live, who they are, and what their circumstances are.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Stephen. We've got to dash on because we've got less than a minute now. The UK has taxed people individually since 1990. We still don't do this in the Isle of Man. Maybe in the modern world, a married woman's income shouldn't be treated as a joint asset, says Muriel. What's the minister's opinion?
So, Muriel, I can speak from the heart or from the wallet. We've actually looked at, because you're quite right, we'd have joint assessment here. So if you're married, or if you're in a long-term relationship, you can be jointly assessed, and it reduces your taxable income. Taking that away would save me a lot of money, but I would hate to break any marriages.
Okay, all right, thanks for that. And briefly, if you would, here's the last question. It has nothing to do with Treasury. What's the latest on the assisted dying bill?
So I'm still waiting for Royal Assent. The Ministry of Justice have had it for over 7 months now, and I'm reminding them every now and again that we have our own democracy here, and the laws we pass should also be agreed by the Ministry of Defence and get the sign-off from the King.
Okay. Thanks for being with us today. We'll see you in 2026. Have a happy Christmas.
I'll look forward to that.
WINT.